Welcome to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliott Price. Brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub.
There's a lead pass in on Bill McDavid. Scores! 3-1 Canada!
Here's the 1-2 pitch from Martinez. Ball hit out into center field, going back. Marquise Grissom. He's got it! Dennis Martinez has pitched a perfect game.
There's a shot. They score! Duclair! 1-0. 23 seconds in. Canada jumps on top.
Here's the 2-1 pitch. Cordero swings. Base hit. The Expos will win. The Expos will win. Cordero with a base hit to win the ball game in the bottom of the ninth inning.
The drought is over. Drink it in, Canada. World champions.
And now here's your host, Elliott Price.
Was the night before the end of the Olympics, and all through hockey land, it was time to ratchet things up for the World Cup. It doesn't rhyme. So here we go. Modest advertising patches will appear on the shoulders of players. Who doesn't believe this experiment is coming? After Gary Bettman says, and I quote, "Nobody should say that means the next step is to put them on NHL jerseys. I'm a believer in the history, tradition, and exactly how special NHL sweaters are." Done deal, right? Gotta be. Many will like the technology coming inside the pucks for the event. That will help track info like puck and skating speed, puck trajectory, distance traveled for players, as well as distance traveled for pucks. Why can't they put something in that puck that will tell us if the puck has actually crossed the line and that it's a goal? Is that so difficult? They can do all those other things? Hello? News on goaltending equipment changes. Not much. Gary Bettman hinting they may not have that ready for the coming season. And I see that the North American and European teams have opened their Twitter accounts today. Nice. And it hit me again. If this was 1987, Wayne Gretzky would not have been able to pass to Mario for that iconic goal. 66 would have been too young, and he would have been playing for the other team. So there you go. Did you watch any of that press conference, National Hockey League, Gary Bettman and Donald Fehr? And
to be honest with you, not a lot more exciting
than the Ottawa Senators retiring Daniel Alfredson.
This was more of a major hockey announcement than that. But again, I'm just looking forward to the games. Yes. Right now, it's great that they'll have the village, all of that. They had the village. They're going to have some weird looking tower, from what I saw.
I believe September 15th.
It's close. It's very close.
I think. Canada plays the Czech Republic.
I know it's close because I was looking at the magazine they had today. I was in the store. They already have the programs out, so it's getting very close. And look, I'm still not sure how I feel about it. Yeah. It's not run by the IIHF. It's run by the NHL. Yeah. It's a little different, but there's no question.
Why does it bother you that it's not run by the...
I'm just saying, a lot of people seem to think it'll be different. I don't know. I don't care. In the end, it's Canada versus U.S. We get to see
it's Canada
the young
and U.S. versus Canada and U.S.
Well, I kind of like that. That young team has...
I know, but it makes no sense. There's no... I mean...
It's not national pride at that point.
And that's
I
what
agree.
This tournament is all about. And so I mentioned earlier that they wouldn't have had Mario Lemieux on that team that won the... You know, say what you want about... the Summit Series, but that Canada Cup between Canada and Russia that finished up in that crazy goal with Lemieux getting fed by Gretzky wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen because Lemieux would have been playing for Team North America. And so what's going to happen 4 years from now? 4 years from now? So what is it, 23 and under? Is that what it is?
23 and under. And what I don't like is
that
I'm
means
fine
that Connor McDavid, 4 years from now, is still going to play for that team. It's stupid.
He would be on the team this year.
I'm sorry, but at that point, he's going to be the best player in the world.
Yes,
and he's not going to be playing for Canada.
That's
stupid.
I think it should be you're allowed to take. If you don't make it on those teams, then it's like a Canada. We used to talk about this.
Right, this sounds like an opening face-off here.
Having
what's
a second Canada
here?
Team. Hey, there's
supposed
nothing
to, we're supposed to save this.
When there's good topics, it's there. We got a month to talk about this.
We have a busy show tonight. We do, of course, to the opening face-off. Right around the corner, we'll talk to Marika Washchishin from golf.com as the women's golf opened up at the Olympics today. Much going on. And how do we feel about the Olympics vis-a-vis the venue and Rio and everything that's going on? Our resident sociologist, Abby Goldberg, will be in. Started a Twitter war already. He's very busy. If we can get him off Twitter and on the radio, then we will talk to him about that. Our countdown moves into the top half now. We're done with the bottom half. The top 16 starting tonight. So done with the Browns and the Niners, the Titans, the Ravens, the Lions, the Bucks, the Chargers, the Rams, the Falcons, the Bears, the Dolphins, Washington, the Eagles, the Saints, the Cowboys and the Bills, and we're down to Team 16. That's coming up tonight. As we do every Wednesday night, we'll get ready for the Sportsnet Central panel with the host with the most, Elias Makos. He'll join us in the 9 o'clock hour. And before the Alouettes completely implode, we'll talk to Herb Zerkowski about the local football team and the direction that they are going in. And you should know that all of this is brought to you by Monsieur Drain. He's the best. Miss your drain. Sooner or later, you'll run into a drain or pipe problem, and you'll be happy you are listening to me right now because you won't worry. You'll know exactly what to do. You'll call 514-640-0070. If you couldn't remember the number, I'd only tell it to you every night. Grant, what's the number?
0070
640-0070. That's good.
Yeah, well, I remember.
I only ask you every night. I mean, that's, you know.
Well, you judged me for not remembering numbers, so now I remember.
You.
Now it's the only number I know.
There you go.
And actually, Lester's, again, is, I mean, as long as you know the number 13,
yeah, you're
in good shape.
Yeah, you've got to start with a 2, though. But this is Monsieur Drain, and since Grant rarely remembers the number, he always remembers MonsieurDrain.com.
And 640-0070.
Just in case you have any kind of pipe or drain problem, that's the number to call. Opening face-off coming up. You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson on CFMB 1280 AM in Montreal.
Tackling the latest headlines and the hottest topics, it's time for the opening face-off with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
Last night, it looked good while we were on air. That's not where I was going with it, but Canada's women's basketball team looked like they had it, 13 points.
Shouldn't have left here. If we just sat here in this room and watched it, they would have...
We are to blame.
You believe
no
that?
No question.
Do you believe that?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
But if it was... You know what? Sometimes... Anyways,
no.
Another topic.
No,
another
don't go
topic.
There. It's not true.
But they lost yesterday in the quarterfinals versus France, the same day that our soccer team lost to Germany in the semis. Which team was more disappointing, soccer or basketball, if you had to pick one this year?
Oh, definitely the basketball team.
Definitely?
Yeah.
Because they weren't high-ranked either, right? They were ranked 9th and 10th.
I know.
But one made it to the semis.
Right. Hey, one's not done yet.
True. They could still bring in a bronze.
And the basketball team had it in their grasp. But they were way out in front early in the game. And I don't know. I watched the game last night, and it was very disappointing. I thought they could beat France.
They had them, right?
I don't know. I'm disappointed. And the thing is that it really doesn't matter for me or you. It doesn't matter. These poor girls, you know, and the ones that were there 4 years ago and denied a spot in the medal round. You know, I think it's 7 of the 12.
Yeah.
And so heartbreaking for them. We will think of something else in a couple of days. And 4 years from now, we'll hope another group of Canadian girls are able to go further than this group. But they will carry this for a long time. So I feel badly for them.
Look, they were ranked 9th. They still finish in the top 8 no matter what, somewhere from 4 to 8, right? It's still a somewhat of an overachievement. But I get what you're saying. The women's soccer did seem to do more. My answer, I'm cheating here, men's basketball is the loser in this. And I know you agree deep down. I'm sorry, I was watching this. Both teams, ladies, could hold their heads high. They gave their best effort. They went out and tried, right? The men's, I hope Andrew Wiggins, I hope all these guys, I know Murray's different, he couldn't, right? But I hope these guys are watching at home. The U.S. looked beatable, maybe not today, but I'm looking at these teams, and I'm telling you right now, 4 years from now, if these guys go, they better put in their best effort they've ever put in their lives, because there's going to be a lot of pressure. You don't get many chances at this, right? Look at Manu Ginobili, got a standing ovation when he left the court today, because people know you can only get three cracks at this in your career, right? Wiggins may have just given up one, so I'm going to say neither there. They both did, you know, what they should. They finished ahead of where they were ranked.
You know what bothers me, because it hit home today, over the last 2 years, year and change, as Canada tried to qualify basketball-wise the men for the Olympics. You know, once it was Tristan Thompson, and it was a contract thing with the National Basketball Association. This year, Jamal Murray couldn't go because he hadn't signed his NBA contract yet. And I'm reading today about Johnny Hockey, and he's ready to go. He's going to buy his own insurance. He's going to play in the World Cup of Hockey.
And it's...
Sorry. I'm sorry, okay? You really wanted to play for
and
your country.
Not even
you really wanted
for
to be
his country.
There.
He's
okay?
going to play for
I understand.
The,
he wants to play in this tournament. You could have played for your country. You could have done everything possible to do whatever is necessary to get your country to where it should be. And I don't understand. I don't get it. Okay, I just don't get it. All right? In that case, you should never play for our country.
Well, speaking about national pride, look, today Neymar scored the fastest Olympic goal, scoring 15 seconds in. Brazil then beat Honduras 6-0. They'll face Germany Saturday for the gold medal. How big is this game for Brazil as a country? Forget the team right now, but the country watching, after all the negative focus on the country, how big is this for them?
Oh, it's you know, soccer. It's Brazil. I mean, come on.
It's their World Cup, right? It's their Canada winning the hockey gold medal. Let's be honest. Sure. If we win no other medals,
right?
But we win that one, absolutely, we're happy. And I think I agree with that. I will say this too: if they win, I think it erases Brazilians when they look back at this. They win that gold, that's all they're remembering from this Olympics. Because that's the only thing they've never won. Brazil soccer's won everything you can win. They've never won the Olympic gold. I think it's kind of a chance at redemption for them on home soil. They lost in the finals in 2012. And who are they playing? Germany right now? Do you remember the World Cup? 7-1 loss at home in front of your fans. I thought this tournament, I'm going to say it aloud, I thought it was garbage. The soccer, the men's soccer... I preferred watching the women's, and I'm not even joking.
Well,
and I love World Cup. I love Euro Cup. There's something about Olympics. It looks so poor compared to the regular.
Okay, I watched Brazil and Sweden, the women's game.
And it was... Oh, yeah? I didn't see it, I'll be honest.
Oh, look, you know, I know that... Hope Solo called them cowards for the way that they played, but I mean, Sweden pretty much was spending
just
their time
that.
Making sure they didn't get scored upon. Hey, but, I got a question for you, okay? Because I'm staring at a tweet right now from Milos Raonic. It says, "It's been a while, and it's good to be back." Hashtag Team Milos sent a picture, and I haven't sent it yet, but it says, "Are you at the Olympics?"
Yeah, I want to say.
Should I send
you should
that?
Write go home and then wait. Oh wait, you are.
Should I send it because it's
no.
It's,
what if we get him as a guest one? We got to be nice.
That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah, we gotta be nice.
Is that what we do? Is that why we do things?
Well, now you have to send it. Now you have to send it. You've already
because of how it's going to play out in the future if it benefits us.
Well, now we send it.
What kind of people are we?
We write something even meaner now.
Okay.
Now we have to attack.
I'm sending it, right?
I'm going to send a double whammy.
You're
going to go with something worse. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
I sent it.
I'll quote the tweet. But, okay, so moving on from that.
Yeah.
This one, it's a little bit of probably a sensitive subject, but look, South Africa's Caster Semenya is back in the headlines. I'm not sure if you remember
her,
but a while back, do, clearly.
Yeah.
So a while back, for those that might not, she had won and was forced to undergo sex testing to see male
and female. Because she has both male and female sex organs.
Well, all I've seen now is she has high levels of testosterone that says nothing about the organs. That was proven wrong. She was just ended up being hyperandrogenic, right? Now, the people competing with her, right, are saying that it's not fair. Some people today even went to go say that it's really unfair and that they should have separate events for people like that. Now, she is female.
She would win.
Well, I'm saying, they're saying there's a bunch of them in this race and it's easy for them. I'm using the word them a lot, which isn't right, but it's in the quote. Now, is this okay? Because they're still female, right? It's not a steroid you're taking, but for others... You know, if you have high levels of testosterone, John Jones, right? Yeah. High levels of testosterone. He is a man. And what happened? He's banned. So it's, I think, I'm going to say this and it'll sound bad. I agree that if something gives you an unfair advantage, then it should be regulated. There should be something that they could take medication, maybe. That's what I was reading, that can lower it. Are you saying no and just let them compete?
I have no idea. I don't know. I mean, the whole thing is very confusing to me. I don't understand. I don't understand the genetics of it all. What constitutes the male and what constitutes the female, and you got these parts and how much of that. If it gives you any advantage at all, then it's not fair.
Well, it's like Pistorius, right? Everybody let him race because he wasn't winning. Now, if he was winning gold and those legs made him faster, those prosthetic legs, people would have not allowed it after a certain point.
I don't know, Grant. I don't think you want to get this guy mad.
Just don't use his bathroom. That's all. You're safe. But, okay, last question.
You laugh at that.
That's pretty wrong. You're right. You're right. Now, most ridiculous story from the Olympics yesterday. This is even better.
Okay.
This is even... There's a few gems in here. Wait. First of all, you're going to vote on which one's the most ridiculous, okay?
All right.
One, Ryan Lochte and company being under fire.
They're calling him a liar, right?
As Brazilian authorities didn't want him leaving the country.
Right.
They tried to seize his passports to help cooperate with this investigation. And now he's being doubted as they're saying they can't find witnesses. Witnesses to four guys with guns. Yeah, I'm sure the witnesses are just lining up to come out. And the taxi driver can't be found. And Lochte doesn't remember his name. So, of course, he's making this up. Pretty ridiculous, right?
Okay.
Next one.
Next.
One day after competitors picking each other up showed Olympic spirit. And yes, Everybody was so proud of it. German officials today have criticized their Hanner twins for holding hands as they crossed the line at the same time, claiming that they treated this 42-kilometer race as a fun run, I'm quoting. And third, Japan's Hiroki Ogita made news in the pole vault yesterday, where the term "he came inches away from success" had never been more literal, as he lost by knocking the bar off with
whatever
you want to go with.
Come on.
And is now mad. He's mad at people and the media for saying that he lost by doing that, where you clearly see in the video.
But it's ridiculous that that is what people are saying. Come on. Seriously.
But that's ridiculous.
I think that's stupid. I'm going with that. And it's not ridiculous. It's stupid.
I'm just saying, Freddie showed
you're
the video.
You're all juvenile. You're all like 10 years old. Shame on you, Freddie. You're laughing. Shame on Grant because he's laughing, but he's holding it in because he's on the radio.
My vote was for Lochte. I think that's crazy that Brazilian officials are saying that. And look, the last one we were going to go with, we're going to save because you're going to play it in voices. But it has to do with John Gibbons and Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, I think I've got it. I hope it plays properly. You never know.
So we'll do that. We'll save it for that. But I just want you to answer after you hear it. How good do you think Josh Donaldson is at coming up with stories to explain things? Because it's pretty, I'm not going to lie, I liked his
In case you missed it, Josh Donaldson, unhappy with his at-bat, comes back to the dugout and throws his bat in the dugout. Okay, and you see one player look back like, geez, dude, what are you doing? And then the manager Gibbons comes over and talks to him, and Troy Tulowitzki has to come between them to break it up.
Oh, it was heated. It was definitely
a
heated
the
argument.
Dog days of summer. There's 162 games. They've been together since April. This stuff goes on all. It's like, the fights that happen during a practice in the National Hockey League between teammates happens every year, happens to every team. Okay?
I just love his excuse. I think the way he defuses it is great.
All right, the voice is coming up.
The opening face-off with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
Lester's Deli. You can't do better than that, and that's why I'm going there tomorrow. Why don't you join me for lunch? I'm going to be at Lester's Deli. Let's see. I'm going to be there, I don't know, 11:30 to noon, something like that, because, hey, it's time, I like having my Lester's Deli at home, but sometimes you just got to go to 1057 Bernard and watch the Magic Kitchen. You can have it in your very own kitchen, tasting exactly at home what the meat cutter at Lester's Deli can do, and serve it to your family and friends. You see, Lester's Deli has perfected how to package the love that they have for smoked meat. So when you take that Lester's Deli tradition out of your fridge and drop it into some warm water, be careful. Lester's Deli. They'll complete the experience for you. 213-13-13, the bread, the mustard, the pickles, the coleslaw. I'm bringing it all home for the weekend. I'm having lunch, but I'm bringing it all home for the weekend and the weekend after that, so that the family who cannot, unfortunately, join me at Lester's Deli for lunch tomorrow can have Lester's Deli for dinner tomorrow, tasting exactly as it does at 1057 Bernard. All you have to do is call him at 213-1313. Voices, including the one that Grant told us about from the Bringer of Rain, in a moment.
Playing hurt? Baby, that don't faze me. I don't got time for pain. The only pain I got time for is the pain I put on fools who don't know what time it is. Sure, I check a few fools. I give them the pain. But sometimes it's about intimidation, you know? It's mind games.
Elliot Price, gravy, hamburgers, and fries.
Worlds are colliding!
Elliot Price, gravy, hamburgers, and fries.
That's no tragedy.
Ça peut fonctionner.
All right, time for voices. And look, I'm going to try and play this one right off the sportsnet.ca website. It'll be Josh Donaldson coming up in a few minutes. It's always possible they'll go back to a commercial when I'm playing it. So I got my fingers crossed it's going to work. First of all right, great interview. Anyone that doesn't know Greg Joy doesn't know Canadian Olympic history, especially in this town. It was the greatest moment of the Olympics for Canada when it was held in Montreal. He won the silver medal in the high jump, and he was just pumped. We saw Donovan Bailey, right, watching DeGrasse win the bronze medal in the 100 meters. Well, Jeff Blair talked to Greg Joy this morning, and it's a great interview. We'll run it at the end of the show. Here's Greg Joy. He knew it was gold from the very first jump.
On the first jump, there's a relaxation, a confidence, and there's this quickness that happens that, if you're a jumper, you know what it is. And when I saw Derek come around the corner and just pop off the ground, like it was just so beautiful. I went, oh boy, this is it. I knew, first jump, I knew he had the gold.
First jump, he knew he had the gold. Hey, the guy knows. He won a silver medal at the Olympics, Greg Joy. A great interview, as I said, with Jeff Blair. I got to wait till the end of the show for that. Meanwhile, the National Hockey League had a press conference today. They're getting ready for the World Cup of Hockey. Lots of answers to other questions. Goaltending equipment, Mr. Commissioner?
It's still a work in progress. I know our people in hockey operations are working very hard with the Players Association. I am hopeful that we can get it in place because I think it's important.
For the World Cup?
Well, or at least for the regular season.
All right. The other thing was about the technology that they're going to be working with to help fans and media and coaches. And I quote from the press event today, we'll be deploying that technology in both pucks, which are being manufactured as we speak, and player tags that will be used throughout the tournament. By the way, they're making 750 pucks, right? And if it goes in the stands, you know what happens to it? You keep it. So how much is this worth? I mean, the technology that they're using. Quantitative data that'll be tracking throughout the tournament will be inside the puck. It'll include puck and skating speed. It'll include puck trajectory, distance travel for players, on and on it goes. Here's the commissioner on the technology.
We think the technology has enormous promise, and having a controlled environment with 2 weeks of games at the Air Canada Centre gives us an opportunity, without affecting the competition itself, to see if we can do some things from a technology standpoint that will enhance the viewership of the game, provide a greater connectivity of fans to the game, more data, more information, and help the broadcasters convey the messages and the entertainment that's going on the ice in ways never done before.
There's the commissioner. You'll be reading about this stuff for the next little while as they try to bridge the gap between now and then. A month from now, the World Cup of Hockey and the best players in the world getting together to compete against one another. I'm looking forward to it. Meanwhile, Grant told you about this piece of audio. Well, it's video, but you can't see it, so it's audio to you. It's Josh Donaldson. In case you missed it, Donaldson coming back to the dugout through his bat. Manager John Gibbons gets in his face, and eventually shortstop Troy Tulowitzki has to get between the two. Donaldson explaining the situation. I'll tell you right now, it's not the best Blue Jays audio you're going to hear in this segment. All right? Here's Josh Donaldson.
Sometimes the cameras catch things and they caught you getting a little bit angry there. Can you maybe explain your take of what happened there?
You know, I mean, I just come back to the dugout and hit my bat against the thing, and Gibby asked me what kind of cologne I was wearing. And I said, it's this new cologne called Tom Ford. I just got it. He's like, really? Oh. So he kind of got pretty close to me and I guess got a good whiff of it. And I was like, hey, man, back up. So I was like, I'll give you some after the game. So then we separated.
Is that when Tulowitzki jumped in to get a smell as well?
Yeah, he wanted it. I think he liked it too.
So there you go.
Tulowitzki right. jumped in to get a smell too.
That's yeah, right. Liked it. Absolutely. Okay. But that's not the best audio you're going to hear on the Blue Jays today. Here you go. This is the WWE tag team. Well, they'll introduce themselves. Have a listen.
Bada boom, realest guys in a room. Enzo Amore, big Cash out here. What do we got over here in the dugout, Cash?
Do they look like Blue Jays, but something else? What are they?
I think we got a cup of hate-ish. A cup of hate-ish. But hate ain't nothing but love disguised by jealousy. And I'd be jealous, too, if I was looking at the Yankees wearing pinstripes, all right? That's the best uniform in sports. How you doing?
Bob, Flash, and Jack over there in the studio, I got to tell you this. If there was one word that would never, ever in 1 million years describe any of you or the New York Yankees, but one word that would describe the Toronto Blue Jays would be, hold on. S-A-W-F-T, so...
in front of me. S-A-W-F-T. Stop. Come on.
I love that.
Do you know these wrestling guys?
I don't know them.
You don't know them?
No.
Enzo Amore and Big Cash. Okay, I don't know them. I've never heard of them. I don't know wrestlers anymore. So it's a long,
yeah,
long
when
time
I was
ago.
A kid, when I was younger, yeah, I liked yeah. it. Now, not so
well,
much.
I didn't like I've never really liked the wrestling.
The UFC is taking over now.
I like the storyline, the silliness of all those guys talking. When the wrestling came on, I left. I just wanted to hear them talk and tell their stories. And, you know, Macho Man, Randy Savage, and the Hulk, and all of those.
See, for me, it was Stone Cold, The Rock. Always great, though. Right?
On
always great, guys.
All right. So there you go. There's the voices. No time. Right now, I'm sorry. There's no time right now for what the hell are they talking about? But we'll squeeze it in somewhere around here because we're going to talk to Marika Wash-Tishan, head of Canada Dew, the two Canadian women in day one of golf at the Olympics. We'll find out with Marika from golf.com coming up after Grant's update. Time now for a Sportsnet Tonight sports update with Grant Robinson.
Last night, the women's basketball team lost to France in the quarterfinals. They had a 13-point lead in the second quarter, so very disappointing as foul trouble and poor shooting was too much to overcome for the Canadians. Good news for the Canadians last night, though. While we were on air, Derek Dwayne won Canada's third gold medal of the Olympics. The high jump gold was the first gold in track and field for Canada since Donovan Bailey's in the 100-meter dash in 1996. Today in the Olympics, men's volleyball was eliminated in straight sets by Russia in the quarterfinals. And some more bad news, Canadian wrestler Dora Yeats lost out in the bronze medal match. She finishes fourth, still something to be proud of there. Brooke Henderson, after the first round, is five shots back at minus one. Elena Sharp is at one over. She's tied for 37th out of 60 golfers, so both very much in it there. Damian Warner, participating in the decathlon, said he expected gold, and he's off to a good start as he is currently second after four events. He cleared 2.04 meters in the high jump, closing the gap on first place Ashton Eaton from the U.S. He's currently 68 points behind him, and they are about to partake in the 400-meter dash, which will be the fifth event in that. Canadian Melissa Bishop advanced to the semis in the 800 meters with the fastest qualifying time. And Brazil men's soccer gave host nation Brazil something to smile about finally. Neymar, 15 seconds in, scored the fastest Olympic goal ever. And Brazil dominated Honduras, won 6-0. They will play Germany Saturday, trying to avenge a 7-1 loss at the World Cup versus the Germans. And in baseball, the Blue Jays, after a great comeback last night, stayed hot today, beating the Yankees 7-4. J.A. Happ, what can you say, 11 consecutive wins and the first 17-game winner in the majors. 9 strikeouts and 7.1 innings. And Melvin Upton Jr. finally did something at the plate, 2 for 3, a home run, 3 RBIs today for the Blue Jays. And that's a Sportsnet Tonight sports update.
Elia.
Price.
C'est moi.
Elia.
I'm the guy.
There is not any man like him anywhere in the world.
You're tuned in to Sportsnet Tonight.
Ding, ding, ding.
With Elliot Price.
Elliot Price.
On 1280 AM, Montreal.
Oh, the deep burn.
Sportsnet Tonight.
Oh,
Elliot Price. Elliot.
It's on me.
Elliot.
I'm the guy. I.
As Grant told you, it was an up and down kind of day for Canada's golfers. Little bit of this, little bit of that. Couple of double bogeys for Brooke Henderson, but she fought her way back. The eagles, some birdies. It's been a while since we've had an opportunity to talk to Golf.com's Marika Washtishin, but here she is. Hello, Marika. How are you?
Good, thanks, Elliot. How are you?
I'm okay. Not as good as you were when you were in PEI playing some of Canada's finest courses, I got to say.
Oh, my goodness. Let me tell you, if you have never been to PEI to play golf, I had never been to PEI, period, which is a huge mistake in my 26 years of life. But if you haven't been to play golf, you got to go. It's absolutely gorgeous. The hospitality is amazing and the courses are beautiful.
People are the greatest. I worked in New Brunswick for 3 years, and we went there to play hockey and to raise some money in Summerside, Prince Edward Island. Just gorgeous. Just a beautiful part of the country. And the people are the best. All right.
They really are.
So, you know, Brooke Henderson, she didn't finish off the latest part of her PGA season the best, but, you know, golf, it's one week is this, another week is that, and kind of a little bit of everything today. I think it was, first of all, it's a dream. It has always been a dream of hers to play at the Olympics, so no matter what happens to her, this is going to be a positive experience.
Oh, no doubt. And, I mean, she's so young, and hopefully if the Olympics decide to keep golf in it past Tokyo in 2020, I don't think there's any doubt that she'll be representing Canada again in 4 years. But hopefully she'll get a number of chances to do that. But, yeah, I mean, we've talked about Brooke before. She's such a sweetheart and just really loves what she does. And, of course, she should, and she does a good job of it. She had a good day today, and it was nice to watch her out on the course today.
As she said, you know, I don't usually make doubles, and she made a couple of them, but she bounced back from them right away. The eagle she made was sensational, and, you know, it's amazing, her demeanor, and it reminds me of some of the hockey players that grow up in this country, the great ones, the Wayne Gretzky's and Connor McDavid. They are way beyond their years and how they handle everything. They've been taught, or it's inside of them or something, but she's so cool with everything. It's really amazing.
Yeah, and as one of the things that the NBC commentators were saying through the Golf Channel was that, you know, we're not used to seeing this side of Brooke Henderson, and not so much in the disciplined way, because of course she has to be, but not as bubbly, not as smiley. She's really focusing and really taking this Olympic journey seriously. Maybe it was a little bit of nerves at the beginning. She started to lighten up a little bit at the end, but you're right. I mean, she is so calm and collected and mature beyond her years out there.
It's amazing because Elena Sharp's been playing better than Brooke Henderson over the last few weeks since Brooke was the hottest player on tour, and it's almost like she's an afterthought here. One over today, she's two shots behind Brooke, but she's been playing really well.
Yeah, and she's not out of it yet. She's got an earlier tee time tomorrow, so she'll be able to take advantage of different weather conditions than she had today in Rio. You're right. I think it's unfair that everybody just sort of kind of forgets about Elena a little bit. She has had, as you said, a very consistent year on tour and her best year to date. So she played well today, won over par. She's not out of it. I'll be looking to see if she can get something going tomorrow and hopefully go for a run on the weekend.
Tell us about the young lady leading this tournament. She obviously had a topsy-turvy last event where she had a big lead. Not last event, but last major. A big lead. She saw it, dissipate from six shots to one and then hung on. So, I mean, she is probably feeling real good and has an overabundance of confidence at this point.
Absolutely. Arya Jutanugarn from Thailand. She came into Rio being one of the favorites. It was impossible not to look at her for this event. She had a major win this season, a couple of other wins. So she's had a very, very good year. And she also had kind of a funny round. There was some interesting and very colorful, I guess you could say, looking scorecards out there today. She had a back-to-back double bogey eagle. And then she still finished with a 6-under 65 with a double bogey on her card. So it sort of just goes to show you how strong she is when she's on. And so she's definitely going to be a force to contend with. You know, she was tied with Inbi Park for, I think she had four or five holes left. And I think there was no question in anybody's mind that she was going to take the outright lead.
Marika, I really golf in tournaments, you know, so for me, when I have a bad day, it's a race the next day. I go in, it's a new one, there's no problem. But for Brooke Henderson, like, again, we mentioned them, the two double bogeys. She's not used to that. How important was it for her to erase those two double bogeys and end up under par to, you know, heading into day two at that minus one and only five shots off?
Well, I mean, as casual golfers, even, we know that a lot of it is mental. It's 95% mental. So being under par, saying that you are underneath like the average that everybody else has shot is so huge, especially in this kind of a world stage where maybe there's a little bit more pressure on her than your typical LPGA tournament or even an LPGA major. I think becoming one under those four other birdies that really helped her is huge. And I think that she'll take that momentum going into tomorrow and try to make a couple more birdies tomorrow.
Moving away from golf for a second,
you had one of my, away from
well, I
golf.
Want to ask a question because she tweeted out probably my favorite tweet of the Olympics so
oh, wow.
far. So I have to give credit.
In that case.
Where Donovan Bailey is reacting to Andre
Oh,
DeGrasse,
that was a good one, yeah.
And I know I had kind of used it there. Let's say Brooke Henderson wins this. Do you see Mike Weir jumping up at home like that or any Canadian really taking pride like that? Is this as big as that would be?
How great would that be to see Mike Weir jumping around on the couch cheering for Brooke? Let's think about that for a second. You know, that tweet was, I guess I could say, semi-viral. Can you imagine Mike Weir jumping around? Oh, that'd be funny. But, you know, I think it's hard to say. I think we as golf fans really do believe that that is a thing that would create a huge amount of buzz around the country. I mean, the reality is that golf is not as well-known a sport on the Olympic stage anywhere, including Canada. So I think a lot of people are being introduced to her this week. I think it's a good story for most people to feel good about if she comes away with a gold medal. I'm not sure they're going to be rolling out a parade, but I would. If she came to New York, I would set up a parade down, you know, like a ticker tape down Broadway and really give Brooke Henderson the red carpet treatment.
With Marika Wasch-Chishin from Golf.com, a Canadian working for Golf.com. And look, you know, there was a lot of questions about the golf at the Olympics coming in. They lost a significant male participation at the top, and Justin Rose did it good. I mean, a lot of emotion, and the men's tournament turned out to be a really good spectacle, and that was very helpful, even without those guys there.
Yeah, I mean, well, let me ask you, did you care? Did you miss Rory McIlroy or Jason Day or Jordan Spieth during the weekend?
No, because our guy had a great first round of 66, and then that means he might start playing well again. So, no, I didn't miss them. No, not at all.
Right, exactly. And I think that's sort of the point, is that there was all of this worry about what was going to happen with Olympic golf, and was anyone going to care? All the big names aren't there. But we had some great drama down the stretch. I think that really helped Henrik Stenson of Sweden and Justin Rose going head-to-head into 18. Obviously, that's something that we as golf writers really hope for, but as golf fans, you want to see that too. And no, I think that everyone sighed a big sigh of relief when that tournament wrapped up. And you could see it in the emotion of the golfers that made the podium. Matt Kuchar from the United States said that he's never been so happy to finish third in his entire life. And it's because it's this extra meaning. You have this piece of metal around your neck that means much, much more worldwide than any tournament title or major could.
Let me put it this way. I mean, the men's majors are so huge, and the women's majors just don't get what they deserve in comparison, that an Olympic gold medal would mean a lot more to the women than the men. Is that off?
I think that's totally correct. I think what you're seeing here, the women feel like they really have an opportunity. They have an opportunity to show the world, really, what their sport is and what they do every day, and that they can do it as well as the men. You know, what's unique about the Olympics is that the men and the women are playing the same course. Yes, the ladies are playing a little bit shorter yardage, but not by much. They're playing the same course with the same television coverage in the same, you know, span of time. And they are having all eyes on them. That doesn't happen week to week. Even the Golf Channel isn't covering the Wyndham Championship until the evenings this weekend, because they're giving the women in Rio their due. So I think they're realizing they can capitalize on this. And then, again, like you said, the gold medal, I think, for a tour that is still really trying to figure out what their traditions and histories are in their majors, a gold medal is a big deal for these women.
All right. Great talking to you, Marika. I'm just thinking that you say that they're trying to show that they could do it as well as the men. They don't do it as well as the men. They do it better than almost all men, except the ones that we see on TV on the weekends.
You're right.
That's the deal. Thanks again. Talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot.
Here I stand.
Here I stand.
Look around, around, around,
around, around, around.
You won't see.
You won't see.
Now I'm here.
Now I'm here.
That was always it's always fun to talk to Marika and get her take on what's going on. You see the pictures she tweeted out when she was in Prince Edward Island?
Yeah, they're pretty.
They really are amazing golf courses in PEI, amongst the best in the entire country. Get an opportunity. I'm not sure which magazine it was. Just printed the top 50 or 100 courses in the country. I think I've played 7 of them or something like that. Anyway, it was weird. I went to Toronto for a wedding. When was it? In June? And I played at my brother-in-law's course. It's on that list. Man, is it tough.
I'll stay away from that one.
You might want to do that.
I'll stay away from that one.
All right. The sociology of the Olympics. What do we think when someone pokes at the host country? And man, have they been poked. Our resident sociologist, Professor Abby Goldberg, coming up.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
Time to talk to our... no, it's not. Yes, it is. Time to talk to our resident sociologist.
Are we sure?
Abby Goldberg. No, you know, that's what happens when you're doing two things at once. And because I was looking at the list that he sent us and the things that we're going to touch on. And very interesting, because you brought up one of the items on our list. Okay, so here you can have a look at the list.
Take a look at this here.
So right over there, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So if you want to start, first of all, we should say hello to our resident sociologist. Usually joins us on Monday, but he was away, so Wednesday it is. Abby Goldberg, how are you?
Good evening, Elliot. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Say hello to Grant.
Grant, what's happening?
A lot, apparently. I've seen the list. It seems like all the Olympic coverage, it's all really relative to this type of conversation. There's no question.
Go ahead.
Elliot's saying, I brought up one earlier, which has to do with the whole gender politics and the Olympics, which obviously we're talking about the, what's her name again, Caster Semenya, who was a story about 6 years ago when she had to undergo sex testing because of how much testosterone she had. What do you make of that when it comes to the whole concept of should she be able to compete because of her high levels of testosterone or not?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly been a lot of talk. It's funny, over the last several days, a lot of people have been sort of saying to me like, gee, you know, we wanted to tune into the Olympics as sort of to get like an escape from politics, maybe an escape from the Donald Trump debates and the arguments, and then when it comes to various things going on at the Olympics, people are debating and arguing and fighting with each other on Twitter just as much as they are with politics. But yeah, Semenya and the sex testing, that's definitely, I mean, one of the biggest issues. And now that she's on to the semifinals, which I believe are tomorrow, I think the discussion is only going to heighten, you know, even over the next few hours. But I mean, for people who've really studied this issue, there's been like a long history since at least 1946 in international competition for women elite athletes. There's been a whole series of efforts, suspicion, that there might actually be men who are trying to get fame and get glory by somehow participating in elite international sports, pretending to be women. And starting in around 1946, various types of tests were implemented to try to prove the sex of the competitors. There's been a sort of a series of different practices that have been used, ranging, if you could imagine, even in the 1960s, where athletes had to parade in front of sort of like a series of gynecologists who did like official public checks. Obviously, I'm sure we could imagine those are pretty humiliating types of practices to go through. Over the course of years, in light of the different policies, there have been a number of athletes who've been disqualified from elite competition. There are some estimates that between around from the 1970s until the 1990s, about 500 plus elite athletes have been disqualified, resulting from, I guess, coming out on the wrong side of a sex test. We're in a situation now with athletes like Caster Semenya and another track and field athlete like Duki Chan, where the current sex test, which basically at the moment has to do with testosterone levels and how much testosterone do the women have. We're at a point in time for a couple of years where the International Olympic Committee and the International Association of Athletic Federations have to basically gather research to determine if, in fact, testosterone at elevated levels provides unfair advantages to women competitors. That was the previous policy. There was a limit. It was struck down just a number of months ago, and that's why Semenya can compete, and that's why this athlete from India, as I said before, Duti Chand, was able to compete. I mean, I sort of view it as there's lots of arguments going around. Sociologically, you know, there's lots of ways to define, you know, what leads to an advantage or not. The bottom line sociologically is that there are people who define themselves as women, have lived their entire lives as women, and as long as they put it forward as a human rights case for them, they've been competing as athletes and identifying as women, and they have the right to pursue it as a human rights case. I don't know ultimately what will happen, but I think we're going to continue to see more discussion and more contestation about this, and the Semenya issue is only going to heat up in the next few days.
Checking out some of the sociological fallouts from the Olympics with our sociologist, Abby Goldberg. Abby, we saw an event take place between an Israeli and an Egyptian, and the Israeli wins the event and goes to shake hands, and the Egyptian wouldn't shake his hand, and this became an incident. So the Olympics, is it not supposed to be about this? Is it supposed to be about friendship? And yet, we don't even know that he didn't want to shake his hand because he was an Israeli. Maybe he was just upset because he lost.
It's, I mean, that was an issue. I mean, this is something that's also been discussed and people arguing and really pissed off and really upset about it. So, yeah, so the Israeli judo practitioner Or Sason won a battle against an Egyptian, Islam El-Shahabi, and the Egyptian would not shake the hand. There were some reports, I don't know actually if this was verified or not, but some reports that the Egyptian athlete would have been receiving some threats back home in Egypt if, in fact, he would have shaken the hand of the Israeli athlete. I don't know if that was verified or substantiated or not. You know, this falls into the category of something where, you know, we say that we don't want the politics in. The Olympics are supposed to be neutral. Really, I mean, I think if we push the conversation, the truth is more like, it's not that we don't want politics in, it's that most of us want the politics that we like in, right? So when the U.S., for an example that I talked about in the last couple of days was that when the U.S., Elliot, or Grant, how did you feel when the U.S. women's national soccer team and Hope Solo were defeated from the Olympic competition?
Yeah.
I was pretty happy.
Sorry, see ya. We won't miss you.
Many of us were happy. Now, certainly we could say, well, Hope Solo did, you know, certainly was a bit of a clown, and she, you know, she certainly did not give off a lot of sportsmanship, but I think we'd also be fooling ourselves if we said that there wasn't some Canadian pride in nationalism that went into our, you know, particular dislike for the U.S. women's side. So do you know, so it's not really, you know, we want to say there's no politics, as in within all sports, it's kind of the politics that we like, that they're there and we're okay with it. When things come up that we don't like, well, then we're gonna be upset about it. Now, obviously, again, the Egyptian not shaking the Israeli's hand certainly goes against that spirit of sportsmanship and friendship in the game. But sociologically, it would be sort of a mistake to think that, you know, the politics and the conflict get erased even in the middle of the battle, even though we would like it to be the case.
All right. Talking about sociology of the Olympic Games, and you know, it strikes me, the question is, why do you want to hold the Olympic Games? What is the benefit of holding the Olympic Games? Certainly it's not a financial one, because you don't make money if you hold the Olympic Games. And from months before the Olympic Games started, Rio started getting the black eyes. And it is not abated. In fact, it's probably better now with the games on than it was before the game started. But so many negative, way more. I mean, if you put them on scales, it would have bent and fallen. The negativity far outweighing the positivity.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's like a couple of things that can be said. Like, on the one hand, you know, when not just sociologists, but journalist critics or fan critics on Twitter, you know, that's always the easy target. Like, when people are critical of, let's say, Rio, or critical of the IOC, very often there's kind of this response, well, you know, well, why are you being so critical? Why are you only pointing to the negative? Does this mean you don't like sports? Do you want to eliminate sports? Do you want to eliminate the Olympics altogether? And so, you know, there is this tendency to kind of think it's an all or nothing thing, right? There's this fear that it's all or nothing, since there are problems economically for Brazil, therefore no city in this situation should go down this route to try to host the games. But on the other hand, listen, we love sports, and sociologically, there's an expression that some sociologists say that, you know, we want to be able to sort of denounce or to point out the problems and the difficulties, but we want to be able to do it in the spirit of hoping to be able to build up and to perpetuate the things that are really, really great about sports. I mean, when a 16-year-old Canadian swimmer wins, you know, we get absolutely thrilled, and this helps to make us feel good. For the Brazilians, there are moments of unity and great joy, and times when they feel that, you know, they're happy that the world is looking in. So I would sort of say that it's important not to kind of take an all or nothing view. You asked before, you know, like, why would you even do it? Well, I think better questions or good questions are, let's not say, you know, why should we do it, but can we actually, you know, take some of the concern that we have, some of the people who want to be involved, and can we actually make, even if it's only incremental, can we make certain changes to the way that the current Olympic Games are organized? There are interesting discussions that are underway. We don't hear enough about them, but is it possible, for example, to hold the Olympics in a smaller number of rotating cities, so that you're not constantly, you know, rebuilding venues and spending money that doesn't exist? Are there ways to actually ensure that more people within local areas receive some of the benefits. So I would say that, you know, certainly there's a lot of negative things that we could bring up. But since sports also contains, as we know, so many great potentials for so many wonderful things that we as humans appreciate, you know, we've got to look at it as let's try to identify some of those things that we don't like. Let's keep talking about it, but let's also try to leverage the concern that we have into even incremental changes that will result in these events being better, hopefully, down the road. Does that sound a little too optimistic in the end of the day?
Oh, yeah, it's a terrible thing, being optimistic at the end of the day. That's good. You're going to have to stop that.
I don't want to give up on the international competition.
If you're going to continue on this show, you're going to have to be a little more negative. All right. Sociologist, Professor Abby Goldberg, join us again on Monday, will you?
I'll do my best. Thanks very much, guys. Talk to you later.
He's late, 48 hours, but that's okay. Normally Mondays, here on Wednesday, and he'll be back next Monday. Looking forward to the top half of our National Football League countdown with Daniel Kalis. He'll be around in a couple of minutes after Grant's update. We're down or up to team number 16. What do you think? Down or up? Are we up or down?
We're up.
In the middle.
We're going up, right? We're moving up.
Moving on up.
To top team. I'm
that is
up.
Right. Which will culminate on September 7th, the day before the National Football League season opens up, and we will announce our number one National Football League team, our favorite to go all the way and win the Super Bowl. All right, so Daniel Kalis coming up, got a lot of football talk. We will, of course, talk to Elias Makos, as we do every Wednesday night. He's getting ready for breakfast television tomorrow morning. He's very busy. And, of course, the sports panel. He's coming up just after 9:20. And we will talk to the best football writer in the country, Herb Zerkowski, after 9:30. That's coming up after Grant's update.
Elia. Price.
I'm supposed to be the franchise player.
Elia.
I bet you slice into the woods $100. I never slice.
Come on, Elliot.
I meant to do that.
Yeah. I fart in your general direction.
Elliot.
Price.
You rocket!
You're tuned in to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price.
C'est moi ici qui est responsable.
Here on 1280 AM, Montreal.
It's understanding that makes it possible for people like us to tolerate a person like yourself.
Price!
You know, Elliot, you were right. It's not a lie if you believe it.
All right, let's get to Grant Robinson. It's time for a Sportsnet Tonight sports update.
Today in the Olympics, it started off bad as men's volleyball was eliminated for Canada in straight sets by Russia in the quarterfinals, and Canadian wrestler Dory Yeats lost out on a bronze medal by finishing fourth. But it wasn't all bad news. Brooke Henderson, after the first round, is only five shots back. She shot a minus one. Elena Sharp is at one over, tied for 37th out of 60, so both very much still in it. Damian Warner, participating in the decathlon, said he expected gold, and he is off to a great start as he is second after five events. Problem is, first place Ash Neaton just won the 400 meters as well. But if you look at Damian Warner's performances in each of these events, high jump, he finished third. He finished first in the 100 meters, third in the 400 meters. The problem is, shot put 23rd.
Ouch.
Definitely hurt him. He fell a meter short of his personal best this year, but definitely looks good as he's solidly in second place. Melissa Bishop advanced to the semis in the 800 meters with the fastest qualifying time, 1:58.38. And the host nation, Brazil men's soccer team, gave them something to smile about as Neymar scored 15 seconds in, the fastest Olympic goal ever. And they really just didn't stop as they dominated Honduras 6-0. They'll play Germany on Saturday for the gold medal. They will be definitely trying to avenge the 7-1 loss at the World Cup again in Brazil. So Brazil is hoping for a better result. This time in baseball, the Blue Jays, after a great comeback last night, stayed hot today, beating the Yankees 7-4 in an afternoon game. J.A. Happ does what he's done for quite a while now, wins again, his 11th consecutive win, and he is the first 17-game winner in the major leagues this season. 9 strikeouts in just over 7 innings, and Melvin Upton Jr. went 2-for-3 with a home run and 3 RBIs today, so he got it going at the plate. And that's a Sportsnet Tonight sports update.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight, brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub.
Wow, the Bolt de Grasse romance that's going on has reached new heights. They finished 1-2 in the semifinal. And again, de Grasse has to go against Bolt. So you know, there's only one other space, and he's got to beat everybody else. But at the end, he was gaining ground, and they were real close, and Bolt kind of put it in another, you know, just went, nah, 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 and they laughed at each other. So this continues. And they'll be in the final, so looking forward to that. That'll go tomorrow. Should be a lot of fun. The 200, and then hugs, and no kisses, but the hugs with the grass. And Usain Bolt, and really looking forward to the 200, and then eventually the 4x100. It's going to be busy coming up. Meanwhile, if you've been following our NFL countdown, I know because I asked Dan Kalis in the afternoon what the next team is, so I can get a song ready for it. Dan, how you doing?
Doing all right, and you guys?
Doing good. And so I get it from him, and then I call out because Miles is at home. Soon he won't be, right? I mean, school's coming real soon, and I go, Miles! It's not the Jaguars. So it's amazing. I mean, our teams have been so bad for so long that here we are. We're at team number 16, and it's not the Jaguars, and it's not the Raiders. So we're both still alive here. Dan Kalis, who is team number 16?
We got the J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets.
J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. Way to go. What's the matter with you, guys?
I chanted it before the show. I just can't do it too long.
This is the show.
Yeah, but
there is no, for the rest of the world,
one team.
For the rest of the world, there is no before the show. There is only the show.
It is one of the best chants, I find.
Yeah?
It's better than that. Well, Raiders is different, but you know the go.
We'll run you over. You come to our place. You should come to an Oakland Raiders game in your Dallas Cowboys sweater.
It's on my bucket list.
And sing that Raiders song. Make fun. Yeah, that'll be fun. Then you have to call me to come dig you out. That'll be fun.
Moving on to the Jets.
All right. The New York Jets. Why? I mean, the Jets with the crappy quarterback situation that they have, how have they managed to get ahead of 16 other teams?
Well, I mean, last year they finished 9-7, and I could see them doing that again. They lost one or two players. They made some small additions. They changed their running back, adding Matt Forte. And they changed their left tackle when DeBershaw Ferguson retired, and they traded for Ryan Clady from, they signed Ryan Clady from Denver. But their team is basically the same. So, they're a bunch of good veteran players. I don't think they're going to do better than last year, and I don't really think they're going to do worse. They're going to be right there, right on the cusp of the playoffs, and not make the playoffs.
All right, the running back position usually does not have a long shelf life, so we ask, what does Matt Forte have left?
He's been pretty durable. He did miss some games last year, but he's the type of guy that gets nicked up, but he keeps on playing. That includes this training camp, which he only today or yesterday did he finally get back to individual yesterday, and today team drills. He took some hits, caught some passes, and they said that he looked fast and looked good. So as long as he can get into, shape for the season, which there's, plenty of time for that, I think he's still got a lot left in the tank. They also signed Kyrie Robinson from the Saints, who they like, and they have Bilal Powell from last year. So they're going to try to get a good mix of what each guy can offer and keep them all fresh.
Well, look, the Jets, the story of the offseason was definitely Ryan Fitzpatrick. They played chicken with them all offseason, both not wanting to cave. I'm not going to say one cave, but they definitely realized that they were the only fit and ended up signing. But how important is Fitzpatrick to the Jets season this year? And can he continue the chemistry he seemed to have with Marshall and Decker, giving both essentially career years there with looking there? Can he keep that up, or was that kind of a flash in the pan?
I don't think he's going to do better than last year. He, you know, did set a Jets record for most touchdowns, but I do think he could do the same. He, I think it's not only just the chemistry he has with Marshall and Decker, but the other, his best year before last year was with Chan Gailey in Buffalo. So he obviously has a good chemistry with Gailey. He really understands the offense. Marshall and Decker are pro receivers. These guys are big targets. They can catch it over the middle. They can make the big play. Forte is another guy who's good out of the backfield to catch the ball. So he's got the weapons, and the O-line is still, it's older, but it's still strong. They're going in healthy for now. So I think that he can have another season like he did last season. I don't see why not.
Geno Smith seems to have a day here and a day there where he acts like a baby. Does this become a distraction somewhere along the way here, this guy not getting the job?
I mean, it always can, and I think, you know, he's very frustrated because he was the guy in camp up until they re-signed Fitzpatrick, and he thought maybe he'd get the chance, and he's been promised things, and he's had hopes. You got to hope he's a professional. It's really hard to tell how guys are going to react to being second fiddle, but the truth is it's the NFL. He's one injury away from being in there, so he's got to come in, work hard, be a professional, take his reps, and be ready for when his name gets called, if it gets called.
I just brought up Fitzpatrick. Looking at Eric Decker, right? Brandon Marshall is Brandon Marshall. He's one of the top receivers in the league. He's done it with any quarterback, really. But Eric Decker, once he left Peyton Manning, I thought he regretted the decision the year before last. Only 5 touchdowns the year before. Definitely not the same guy. Last year, 80 receptions, over 1,000 yards, 12 touchdowns again. Is this the real Eric Decker we're going to continue to see, or is he a product of the quarterbacks?
I think you're going to see the same Eric Decker. They moved him to the slot last year, and he really played well there. He got a lot of touchdowns in the red zone. He's a big target. I think part of the issue the year before was also the fact that they had Geno Smith and a bunch of other quarterbacks who aren't very good, so it was very hard for him. Plus, he was the only good receiver, so teams can double up on him. Now with Marshall there, he opens it up a little bit for him. He's healthy. I don't see any reason why he should regress. I mean, you know, he can maybe not score as many TDs. TDs are hard to, you know, repeat every year, but I think that he's a guy that is going to put up the same numbers. He's the target. He works hard. He runs great routes. I don't see a problem with him.
All right. New York Jets. Wow. We are starting to get down to these significant teams. Obviously, everyone coming up now is an opportunity to make the playoffs. They won 9 last year, and so here we go. Team number 16 is the New York Jets, following the Browns and the Niners, the Titans, the Ravens, the Lions, the Bucks, the Chargers, the Rams, the Falcons, the Bears, the Dolphins, Washington, Eagles, Saints, Cowboys, Bills, and the Jets, with Dan Kalis as he counts them down every night on Sportsnet Tonight with Elliott Price, CFMB, 1280 AM, Montreal, leading up to his number one team, the Super Bowl champion, coming up the day before opening day, Wednesday, September 7th. Thank you. DK, talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good night, everyone.
Paul McCartney and Jet, they are 16th team, down to the top 15, just after 9 o'clock tomorrow. Daniel Kalis with team number 15, as Sportsnet Tonight with Elliott Price counts them down in the National Football League. We'll talk to Elias Makos. We still have our conversation with the CFL's best writer, Herb Zerkowski, and then an interview with the man who won the silver in high jumping in Montreal in 1976. And I thought one of the great questions that Jeff asked him, and you'll be hearing just before the top of the hour, there's a whole bunch going on, right? I mean, you're involved in the high jump, but there are events going on all around you while that's going on. So there's cheering for this and there's cheering for that. And the concentration necessary to stay in the moment. It's not like everyone is focused. You're doing the high jump and everyone's focused in on you. There's running going on somewhere. It's crazy. It's not a one event stadium. So I thought that was a very interesting question. So Greg Joy with Jeff Blair before we say goodbye on Sportsnet tonight with Elliot Price. But our good buddy Elias Makos getting ready for the panel tomorrow. We'll see what he has up his sleeve, and we'll talk about the bromance going on between our guy and Jamaica's guy. It's crazy. It's you're supposed to be from the same country.
I love it.
When you have that kind of... All right, Elias Makos coming up next.
That's why I'm all down.
You're tuned in to Sportsnet Tonight with your host, Elliot Price, only on 1280 AM, Montreal.
And I did. I had a bagel with cream cheese, some smoked salmon, and tomato for breakfast before golf today, because you need to know this. Always nice to talk to the host with the most. He's Elias Makos, and you can catch him. Well, you can catch him on breakfast television, but you can catch him on Sportsnet Central Montreal. It's the panel show every week, 6:30 on Thursdays, 11 o'clock on Fridays, and Saturdays at 3 and 6:30 p.m. on City TV Montreal. Elias Makos, how are you?
I'm doing well, Mr. Price. How are you this evening?
Okay, I'm taking you away from this terrific Olympics. Just watching Canada and Jamaica. We are one. No, I mean we are brothers in arms. What's going on here?
You took the words out of my mouth. Brothers in arms, and you know, what can you say about Usain Bolt? Who, the amazing thing here about Mr. Bolt is that obviously he is that's the best name ever for a runner. We've already come to that conclusion, but also that he's going to retire next year. And this is a guy that at, you know, what was it, at 60, 70 meters of the race on Sunday, you know, he realized, oh, I'm losing. So then he ran hard for, you know, the next 10, 15 meters, took the lead, and then just looked around and smiled while he finished the race. And he's just so dominant. It's, you know, I think a lot of other athletes in his position, just knowing they are the best of the best, would say, hey, you know what? I'm going to come back in 4 years. Why not? And, you know, he's decided that that's it. This will be his last Olympics. I spoke to Donovan Bailey on Monday morning on Breakfast Television about this. And, yeah, there are the issues that Donovan brings up. You know, the body does break down, and, you know, the amount of stretching that's required. And every time you stretch, you're tearing your muscles, and that's going to wear on a body. And I get that. But it is amazing that this guy is going to retire from competitions when he's just so much better than everyone else.
Now, Canada wins a gold medal in the high jump yesterday, and I won. Now, obviously, the guy is a name that everyone in the country knows now, and I wonder how many people knew his name and even knew that Canada had an opportunity to win a gold medal in the high jump. And I remember when Greg Joy won his silver, and we'll hear from Greg Joy later in the show in a great interview done by Jeff Blair. I mean, that silver in Montreal, that was, this guy won gold last night. That's unbelievable.
But isn't that, I mean, that's why we love the Olympics. We, you know, and there's lots of reasons not to love the Olympics, but the reason we do love it is because it'll make us watch things that we would never conceive about watching. I was talking to some guy today, and I said, oh, yeah, the high jump. And he honestly, I'm not kidding here, Elliot, he honestly believed that the high jump was an equestrian event.
Oh, my. Well, it is, actually.
I was like, well, you know, I sort of get it. Yeah, they are, because the horses do have to jump over those things, too. But it's not the same. It's not called the high jump.
All right. Talking to Elias Makos. And all of these things, we'll take care of the sports tomorrow with Elias. The show is on at 6:30 on City. Elias hosting every week. I'm wondering, because this is, I don't know your affection with the band, but this is obviously a huge summer and a big week culminating in the concert this Saturday for Canada's Tragically Hip. And I get all emotional about the band and them being Canadian and what's going down with them. I wonder about, you know, the rest of the country and different age groups and how this all fits in.
Well, Elliot, I think there's some sort of a mind meld that happens when we do these things, because you often bring up things that I'm thinking about. And one of the things that, you know, I said, hey, if we have time to go off the beaten path here, I wanted to ask you what your favorite album is to, you know, to get into the car, press play on an album, and then just drive. And okay. For me, for me, it has always been the Tragically Hip. I'm drawing a blank on the name of the album.
Name me a song, I'll tell you the album.
No, it's the one with, it's Trouble at the Hen House.
Okay.
It's Trouble at the Hen House.
Right.
So Trouble at the Hen House, for me, I can press play on that album and just listen to it straight through. There are very few albums that I can do that with. But that to me, you know, and that was the 90s for me and growing up as a teenager and listening to music, and the Tragically Hip were a part of that. And that's an album that I just love. And I think a lot of us are going to be watching that concert on Saturday. But what's your album, Elliot? What's your play drive all night to
funny,
one album?
Funny you should ask that. Anybody that wants to know the answer to that question can check out my website, Price is Right Montreal. .com. I wrote down the 20 albums in my life that I can listen to from beginning to end, and albums that I have never gotten tired of. And there is one album in there by the Tragically Hip, and that is really their first full album, Up to Here. Blow It High Dough, still my favorite Tragically Hip song. And the entire family, kids will sing along. They know every word. And that's definitely in my top five. They are one of my all-time favorite bands, and I can't tell you how excited I was the day that I saw them on Much Music, and I heard that song, and I did not know they were Canadian, and I fell in love with it right away. And to find out that they were one of us, and have produced so many unbelievable albums, I am so proud of them being Canadian. I can't tell you.
And, you know, I'm not saying anything new here, but it is pretty exceptional. But this is a band that is really, they're technically strong. There's the songwriting, you know, Gord Downie's songwriting. But for some reason, they never made it big in the States. They made it to extraordinary heights here. And I think because of that, we sort of have this sort of connection with them. And I think why Saturday is going to be so emotional for a lot of us. I think many of us are planning to go out either to the pub or, you know, the Monkland Festival. They're going to be playing it on a giant screen there. I think there's a reason why Saturday is going to be turning into a sort of communal event for a lot of Canadians.
Elias Makos, we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Elliot. Take care.
That's so funny. That's music at work. That's my music at work. That's crazy. Crazy stuff. All right, we'll talk Canadian Football League with the best football writer in the entire country. How lucky are we to have him in our city? Herb Zurkowski from the Montreal Gazette will join us after Grant's update, which comes your way in a moment. It is time for a Sportsnet Tonight Sports Update with Grant Robinson.
It's too bad our last update wasn't about 30 seconds later, because I would have been able to tell you some good news.
Well, you have bad news now?
Well, no, we still got it, but now it's coming a little later. But the Andre DeGrasse and Usain Bolt bromance continues. The two finished the 200-meter race looking at each other, laughing and smiling, clearly not going at their fastest, and yet still blew away the rest of the field. They ended up being the two fastest times of all the heats. DeGrasse, with his 19.8, broke his own Canadian record, so he's looking very good heading into tomorrow night's final, which will not have Justin Gatlin in it. So another good news for him. DeGrasse obviously looking for his second medal of the Olympics and maybe even getting a third in the 4x100 relay a little later. The track and field day was even better today. I mean, some more good news. Melissa Bishop advanced to the semis in the women's 800 meter with the fastest qualifying time. So that's another person posting one of the fastest times. And Damian Warner participating in the decathlon, possibly the hardest event in the Olympics, is looking great after five events. He's currently in second place. He finished first in the 100 meters, third in the 400 meters, third in the long jump. Unfortunately, 23rd in the shot put. But he's definitely had a great day so far. And Brooke Henderson, after the first round, is five shots back from the leader at minus one. Elena Sharp is at one over, so still definitely not out of it there. In baseball today, the Blue Jays, after a great comeback last night, stayed hot today in the afternoon, beating the Yankees 7-4. J.A. Happ, 11 consecutive wins, the first 17-game winner in the majors, nine strikeouts today. Melvin Upton Jr. in the bottom of the lineup finally got it going. And the Red Sox right now currently lead 8-1 versus the Orioles in the seventh, with David Price on the mound. Finally, some local news for the Owls. Some good news. There hasn't been much this year, but some good news is that the Owls will have Daron Carter on Friday versus Ottawa. His appeal was heard. It's done, but it's not decided. It'll be decided at a later date. So he will be playing Friday versus guess who? Ottawa. So will we see a Daron Carter, Rick Campbell round two?
Yeah. We'll get suspended for two games.
And that's a Sportsnet Tonight Sports Update.
Brought to you by Lester's Deli. Are you planning a party? Lester's Deli, my friends. Let the tradition and experience of 65 years of making smoked meat perfect put you at ease. A party for how many? 10, 50, 100, 1,000? Don't worry about it. Lester's Deli has everything to take care of any amount. Call them at 213-1313. The bread, the mustard, the pickles, the coleslaw, you name it, they've got it. If smoked meat isn't your thing, maybe you should see someone about that. Have a look at the menu online. Everything you need for party perfection out of your kitchen, like you were at Lester's Deli at 1057 Bernard. They'll deliver to your party. Call them 213-1313, Lester's Deli.
Elliot Price.
Crazy fool.
Elliot Price.
With who?
Elliot Price.
Illogical.
Elliot Price.
Weeknights at 8.
Talk to Canada's best football writer. He is Herb Zurkowski. And you all right, Herb?
We have a bad connection, Elliot, so you're going to have to bear with me.
I always bear with you, Herb. It's okay.
Thank you.
I know. You know what? We always say, when a sports team is in town is not doing well, it's a great time to cover them. Is it a great time to cover the Montreal Alouettes, or is it a tough time to cover them with the way things are going right now?
I'm finding it more and more difficult, to tell you the truth. A wise man once told me that the players, I think the players like you more when they're winning, obviously, but the stories are better when the team's losing. But, you know, the perfect season is what they did in 2014. And not in an unconventional way, from one and back.
probably the perfect season when you win as many games as you lose. But it has been, it's certainly been challenging at times this season. And my concern is that they're going to continue to lose games. And if they do, they're just going to fall farther and farther out of playoff contention the farther we go along. And it's going to become more difficult to really find stuff to talk about. You know, how many times can you revisit the fact that this team is struggling on offense and, you know, doesn't score a lot of touchdowns or a lot of points?
They seem to be caught in a catch-22. It seems like, let's face it, if Jim Pop wasn't the coach, he would fire himself as the coach. But it seems like they're going to put this on a platter eventually for Anthony Calvillo. And so what's the point of putting a coach in there if he's going to be the coach? This is a recipe for disaster, and it has been from the beginning.
Well, you know, I certainly agree with you, Elliot. And Tom Higgins was fired last season at roughly this same point after a win in Vancouver when the team was 3-5. And one of the reasons why he was fired was, of course, that they had started 1-7, as I said, the year before, and they did not want to see history repeating itself. They found a way out of it in 2014. They were concerned. There were members of management and probably ownership as well concerned that he would not be able to pull the team out of it 2 years in a row. So they were 3-5. And, you know, I hate to point the finger at Jim Pop, but if they lose this week to Ottawa, and they certainly have to be considered the underdogs, they will be 2-6. They will have a worse record. We all know that Anthony Calvillo is, in all likelihood, being groomed to be the head coach one day. I only hope for Anthony's sake that it's way, way in the distance. Because his coaching career until this point has just, it's been far too quick of an ascension. Let's be realistic. He went from receivers coach to quarterback coach to offensive coordinator, basically in the span of a calendar year or so. And that's just not the way you do it. And the unfortunate thing now, of course, is that, I mean, this is a guy that in many ways is the face of the franchise for a very good reason, because he was an exceptional quarterback for two decades. And, you know, as they continue to struggle offensively to get into the end zone, this is potentially tarnishing his image.
Well, Herb,
and, yes.
How much of this is his fault?
Well, I don't want to blame him because he's not ready to be an offensive coordinator. So, you know, it's a very difficult, yes, if they're not scoring points, you have to blame the offensive coordinator, but he's not ready to be an offensive coordinator. So maybe it's the fault of the person who put him in this position.
Well, it seemed like this, man, oh man, this was a big year for this franchise. We've seen what happens when they don't win games. We've seen it in the past, and what they don't need is history to repeat itself, and they need to right the ship. They can't afford to let this continue. So how do they go along their merry way letting this happen? And I mean, the owner of the team, I know he is a Jim Pop guy, but he can't be happy with what's going on here.
No, of course he's not happy, and he's not going to be. Look, the attendance has been decreasing slowly, game by game. And after this week, they have two more consecutive home games. And if they lose in Ottawa, and if it's not a competitive game, logic dictates that the attendance will continue to drop. I think you raised a good point. It's that you know, there's just, it just seems to be that there's too many members of this organization who are whistling past the graveyard. They keep saying, you know, we're in every game, we're a competitive team, we have a good team on paper, we've been in every game, almost every game going into the fourth quarter. You know, we're going to pull out of this, we're going to pull out of this. Eventually things are going to click, and nobody seems to be really doing anything to fix the problem.
With the Gazette's Herb Zirkowski, we're talking Montreal Alouettes, and I mean, here we are for years and years and years, and we've talked about this before, but it's still alive. The Alouettes never found somebody that was going to be the next guy after Anthony Calvillo, and we're still here. There still is no next guy, and that's killing them.
Well, there's no doubt about that, and look, I said all along from the very beginning that Kevin Glenn probably, you know, he's not, the guy's 37 years old, he's obviously not the long-term solution, but I figured this team would at least be a little more competitive with the presence of a veteran quarterback back there. This is not to say that this is all Kevin Glenn's fault. Obviously, they've had injuries to some key people. But statistics don't lie either. And there was a game in Toronto earlier this year where I believe it was the fourth quarter where they were deep in Toronto territory and they were, certainly a touchdown would have put them in the lead, and he threw a costly interception. Last week, of course, in Edmonton, they're driving from their 34 to the Edmonton 30, when again, he throws an interception. These are mistakes that a guy that has that experience just cannot make. Obviously, it's not all on the quarterback, but you know, the receivers have to get open, they have to run the right routes, he's got to have the protection up front so that he has time to throw. So it's very easy to blame the quarterback. But look, they have many, many issues on offense. I'm not telling you something you don't know. And, you know, if not for the play of their defense, they would probably have a worse record.
Herb Zirkowski, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. Drive safely.
I will, Elliot. Thanks for having me.
What a situation Montreal Alouettes have painted themselves into a corner.
It's rare to see this. It's weird because the last decade,
yeah,
this is the they're the San Antonio Spurs of the CFL, right? Or the Detroit Red Wings. Right. They were always right there. And as soon as he left, you see that the team hasn't been able to replace him.
I don't know, but I mean, they're in a situation now where, well, look, we kicked it around. Something has to happen. Something has to go because they can't continue along the way they're going right now. They're going to keep losing football games. They're going to do it again next year until Anthony's ready to be the head coach of this team.
I don't know.
Interview with Greg Joy. We told you about it. Terrific Canada silver medal winner. It was the premier medal won by a Canadian in this town when the Olympics were here in 1976. Great interview with Jeff Blair from the Jeff Blair Show. Nice name for that show. From Sportsnet 590, The Fan in Toronto. And so we saw Donovan Bailey jumping up and down when DeGrasse won the bronze. So what was it like for a guy that won the silver medal to watch a guy winning the gold in the same event? many years later. Greg Joy, Jeff Blair, next.
Elliot. Elliot.
Price!
Elliot. Elliot. Elliot.
Price!
Elliot. Elliot.
Price!
Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price.
And Greg Robinson.
Well, this whole place sucks. That's right, it sucks.
All right, from Sportsnet 590 in Toronto, love this interview. Think you'll like it, too. Jeff Blair with Greg Joy. He won a silver medal for Canada in the high jump in 1976, and he watched on as Canada won gold last night. Have a listen.
For a lot of us of a certain age, the high jump is kind of there as well because we all had our school track and field day, and we all took a shot at it. I mean, we just did. It was the cool thing to do. You took a shot at it, and you probably started with the bar down around your ankles and worked your way up. And it was one of the sports for a long time. It was almost like the version of X Games back then. It was a unique sport. Greg Joy gave this country a very unique sports moment in 1976 when he won the silver medal at the Montreal Olympics. It's a moment that has been replayed time and time again in Canadian sports history. And one of the great things about the Olympics is that it allows us to remember past Olympians, people who represented the country before, and people who represented the country with pride and success before the current crop of athletes. For that reason, we're very pleased to be joined at this time by Greg Joy. Greg, thank you so much for joining us today. I know my colleague, my former colleague Dave Ebner at the Globe and Mail spoke to you. I believe it was just after Derek Drouin won the bronze medal in London. Now he's won the gold medal. Greg, just your thoughts about seeing a Canadian do something that no Canadian high jumper has done since 32.
It was so impressive. The way he handled it was textbook. It was from his first jump at 220, you could see that he was completely on fire. And I think that scared everybody else because one of the things about the Olympic Games is a lot of pressure. And the last thing you want to do to yourself is put more pressure on the situation. And when he started clearing first jump after first jump, Bondarenko obviously started to panic, even though he looked really good. By passing those high heights, he was in a position where he couldn't miss in order to win. And I think Derek, you saw it on his face, he was relaxed. He was confident. He was calm. And I think he just threw up panic to the entire field. And, wow, I was just beside myself to see him do so well. I actually sent him a message on the weekend.
Right.
Saying, you know, we've already got a full set, so it's time to start over again.
Nicely done. Clearly he listened to you.
Well, I'm taking full credit, just for the record.
hey, Greg, you know, I remember you jumping in Montreal, but I don't remember the other events going around you at the same time. And one of the things that's always amazed me about events like the high jump, like the pole vault and the long jump is, like, these events are actually going on while other races are going, and they kind of fit in between. How on earth do the high jumpers maintain their mental focus when they're standing there and people are going nuts because there might be an 800 meters race going on and you've got to wait till the race is done, and then, you know, God knows what happens if the person decides to take a victory lap with their flag. How do you maintain that focus? What do you look at if you're a high jumper?
It only comes down to the last few jumps. It's, you know, the lower jumps, those are routine for most of us. So it's not a big deal then. And then what happens is when it gets up to the point, like the drama builds, it gets higher, people start getting eliminated, and there's a lot of anticipation of will he make it or won't he. It's really a unique sport that way. And when the high jump is in its final stages, the entire stadium goes silent.
Mm-hmm.
You don't jump when another race is on. You wait for that race to finish, and then the whole focus of the 100,000 people or whatever it is turns to the high jump pit and become, in my case anyway, the entire stadium became completely silent. And that's just, you know, you don't experience that every day in life. So it's quite motivating to think that all eyes are on you and you got the moment.
How different is Derek from you as a jumper, technically?
100%.
Okay.
I was brute strength and ignorance. I could get off the ground like nobody. I could really, really jump high.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a terrible technician. I had what was called a power technique, where you go basically almost straight up and then you try and get over the bar. Derek is very fluid. He uses it's. I think he, him and Milton are the two nicest jumpers to watch for the fluidity of the event. And I was I'm told a fun jumper to watch because there was so much power involved in my takeoff.
Mm-hmm.
So 100% opposite, even though they're both renditions of the Fosbury Flop.
When you watch the event, when you watch the high jump, because you've competed in it, what are you, you know, what gets your attention? You know, is it the technique? Is it just the actual clearing of the bar? Are you, because I've got to think you're looking at this a lot differently, Greg. You're watching Derek a lot differently than the rest of us are. Like, what are the, I guess, what are the things you look for that tell you a guy's going to have a successful jump? Do you look in the eyes? Is it the body language? Is it the first step? What would you look at when you're watching a guy approach the bar?
It's interesting to say that the first thing that I look at is the eyes.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, when I was at the warm-up track before the finals in 76, Hugh Fraser, who was a sprinter on the team with me, was sitting with me, and the guy who won the American Olympic Trials, not Dwight Stones, but the other guy, he ran by, and Hugh said, so that must be who you're concerned about. I said, no, I'm concerned about him, and I pointed at Jacek, who won the gold medal. He says, why? I said, look at his eyes. He's ready. So that's the first thing, and then whether or not on the first jump, there's a relaxation, a confidence, and there's this quickness that happens that if you're a jumper, you know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw Derek come around the corner and just pop off the ground, like it was just so beautiful. I went, oh boy, this is it. I knew, first jump, I knew he had the gold. Unless something dramatically went wrong.
How much were you aware in Montreal of the controversy that Dwight Stones, the world record holder, had started in Montreal, you know, making comments that some people construed to be, slightly negative of French Canadians and the organization of the games? Were you aware of that?
This is a fraternity.
Yeah,
we know each other. We travel around the world together. We compete against each other on a regular basis. And I had heard that Dwight had called French Canadians asinine pigs. And actually, I was doing a Peter Zowski interview afterwards. And I said, well, apparently he said this, and Zowski says, I was there. He said it. So, he put a lot of pressure on himself. But what it did was really fun. During the qualifying round, because he had said these things, the crowd started booing him.
Mm-hmm.
And he handled it really well. I mean, he was dancing in the pit and bowing to the crowd, and he took it in stride. But then the Americans got a little upset, so they started booing us. And that took a lot of the pressure off, because it made it an entertainment rather than a competition for a qualifying round.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Dwight came out to the finals and had his I Love French Canadians t-shirt on and got booed, and then he took off his shirt and he had his 1972 Olympic jersey in protest of for some stupid reason,
mm-hmm,
instead of the 76, and I said, you can't wear that, you have to wear your official uniform, so he had to change, and he just did all these things to put so much pressure on himself that for the rest of us kind of going, well, I'm happy he's doing that.
Takes the pressure off you.
Absolutely, yeah. But yeah, we were aware. I mean, everybody's aware that Dwight has his tendencies.
Greg, it was really great of you to do this. Thanks so much. It was great talking to you, great reminiscing. And this is still, like I say, it's still a great memory. And I think for a lot of us, it's great that Derek won the gold medal, but we're still going to always have a special place for your jump. And I mean, I guess, does the CBC still play that thing? I mean, I'm older now. I don't get up that early or go to bed that late. Do they still play O Canada with you jumping? And
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
24/7 now, but I've always said that if you saw me last night, you stay up too late.
Greg, thanks so much for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Real pleasure. Take care.
Hey, we're out of time. We'll be back tomorrow night. Sorry. Bye.